There's no place to escape to.
This is the last
podcast. On the left.
From your glaze.
That's when the cannibalism started.
What was that?
You know nothing, Jon Snow.
What?
That's what I was told to look at to understand a Yorkshire accent.
You were supposed...
You know nothing, Jon Snow.
Is that from
But I just remember her nude body
from
Game of Thrones, so I don't remember really anything else from that scene, but I remember, you know nothing, Jon Snow.
Well, how is that supposed to sound like the accent?
You know nothing, Ban Kison.
Well,
Simba.
Well, the character had a Yorkshire accent in the show.
No kidding.
And there are people coming up to me all the time. He's like, oh, you're far from me. You can't figure out a Yorkshire accent. You can't figure it out. Yeah, because I'll be chuffed to bits.
Yeah.
Well, I can figure out your side. I can be chuffed to bits. Oh, man. And I'm just alienating everyone. I know it's a small part of England to alienate.
Sure.
But just fucking, you all are saying, because how many messages I got, people like, it's easy. It's easy to do Yorkshire accent. And I was like, no, it's not. Obviously not. Because I can't fucking do it.
No, it's three accents all mushed together.
Well, either way, we love them. Welcome to the last podcast on the left, everyone. I am Ben, looking at Marcus. And of course, we have a wonderful Henry Zabrowski over there in sunny Los Angeles.
Don't you wish I had talent?
Yes, of
don't
course.
You, wish that, you don't think that I don't wish that I had talent? That I could sit in Daniel Day-Lewis's thing and piece the accent together because I watched all the tapes and made all the sounds. Choofed, zoom, little,
right,
like, no, not like, is that wasn't in there.
No.
Chuffed is in there.
You know, I actually, it's kind of interesting, and I don't want to put Marcus and I on blast here, but it's kind of nice that you've sort of not had so much success because then we got you and then now you have to stay with us.
Yeah, we got you right as like your head was bobbing just above
just
water
above,
and we reached
above.
Up and pulled you back down.
Pulled you back down with all the other fishes.
Water's fine. I love being out here. Me, man, it's like hanging out with Ariel. She is sick of me. She's not going anywhere near me.
Right.
Love my little Caribbean crab friend because he goes and he picks all the little bits of shit out of my butt hairs.
Honestly, dude, I would hang out. I would hang out with, what's the name of the,
Ursula.
Ursula.
Oh, yeah.
Because
yeah,
Ursula, I bet you would. Honestly, I bet y'all fuck.
Dude, I don't even care. Whatever she wants to do. Ursula, if she is your friend, how much fun is that?
A lot of
fun. How much fun is that?
I would much rather be my friend than my enemy.
Absolutely.
Yep. Me and her Naomi Campbell.
Yeah.
You don't want to get on her bad side.
Absolutely not. All right. Well, we are on to part two of It's Yorkshire. I know that. I got that right. We are talking the Yorkshire Ripper.
So when we last left Peter Sutcliffe, he was nearly halfway through a 13-murder killing spree. He just murdered his first victim who wasn't in the sex work business on June 26, 1977, which brought the attention of the entire UK to West Yorkshire.
I mean, honestly, to be fair, he can't be halfway through a 13-person serial killing because you can't kill 0.5 of a person.
Yeah,
hello.
It's called attempted murder.
Oh! Never mind.
I don't know. I think a half a person technically counts as like the towel boy for a XFL team.
Now, as we said on the last episode, the investigation into the Yorkshire Ripper murders was a disaster from beginning to end. But this was not a case of incompetence by way of indifference, as it often is when sex workers are involved. Rather, the Yorkshire Ripper investigation failed because they tried to do too much.
Oh.
That's my whole thing.
Oh, really?
I care too much. I try too hard. I work too hard.
Interesting.
And of course, they also had some very distinct disadvantages when it came to solving these murders. First of all, solving a serial killing is by far the hardest murder a homicide detective can catch. Because as we know, most murders are committed by someone with a tangible connection to the victim.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to get the police department to believe and set of parameters saying, yes, we have decided it is a serial killing.
Yeah,
it's hard
right.
to figure out that it's a serial killing, that there's not multiple people. And also, it sends the public into a bit of what you'd call whole-scale mania,
right,
and total
yeah.
panic when you say that there is a serial killer on the loose, and you have to be very careful with your messaging,
yeah.
I guess.
I suppose.
And second, the murder of a sex worker is even more difficult to solve, because clients who might have been witnesses to who their chosen partner might have gone with next, they don't come forward out of fear that their illicit dalliances might be made public.
Yeah, that's the massive problem. That's why we got to do what?
Legalize it.
Legalize it.
That's why I think we should replace. This may be a good thing for a bump for the USPS. What we do is you can get. It's a mailbox, but also it's a glory hole, and you get some of our more willing Postal Service people to go inside that glory hole and just accept whatever comes in.
Sure. The number one drug dealers in the country, the United States Postal Service.
Whoa.
Thank you for your service. They are.
And in addition to all that, whether it be in the UK or America, there is very rarely pressure from the public to solve the murder of a sex worker. So they tend to fall pretty low on the priorities list and very rarely get the resources necessary to solve their murders.
Yeah, it's because everyone in power is just like, Wendy went missing. I don't even know her. I don't know her.
Meanwhile, Wendy's been fucking just sitting on his ass with the fucking spoon up his hole. And he's just going like, oh, yeah, the nuclear weapons codes are 4, 7, 11, 13. You know, he just spilling his guts.
But in the case of the Yorkshire Ripper, that all changed with Jane McDonald. After her murder, the head of the CID in West Yorkshire, a man named George Oldfield, took lead on the case and supervised the entire kerfuffle for the next few years. Now, George Oldfield was not some doddering old police detective bungling his way through the investigation. Just a year before being assigned to the Yorkshire Ripper case, Oldfield had solved an IRA bus bombing that had killed 12 people on a motorway.
Damn.
This was when shit was serious.
Yeah, man. Yeah.
In the UK. But when it came to solving a serial murder case, Oldfield was totally and completely out of his depth. See, Oldfield had a bit of a drinking problem, as well as a temper. And that was in addition to a strange addiction to cough syrup.
So he was Lloyd Bridges from Airplane?
I mean, he's robo-tripping, getting hammered. I could see him stumbling upon a solution to this crime.
I feel of all the drugs that you could be addicted to as a cop, cough syrup, it's got to be the one that makes your job the hardest.
Yeah.
Because cocaine can really zoot it up, right?
Sure.
If you look at, rewatch the movie Bad Lieutenant, Port of Call, New Orleans, right? Nick Cage, incredible in it. But you can
see,
you're kind of tired from drinking all night. You need a little bump to get into the homicide investigation. Totally get it. I think that's actually kind of cool. I think it's actually very smart, especially if you've been drinking all night.
Sure.
But if you're taking cough syrup, you're seeing a lot of trails.
Yeah.
And that's very difficult for evidence.
So
I feel like then you're seeing multiple things.
Henry, what's so interesting is you just proved yourself wrong. What do cops need to find a serial killer? You need a trail. So you see, you can just start following everyone that you see a trail with.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, next thing you know, you're just screaming at a nurse. But it could be a serial killer as well.
It's a time dilation from Outer Worlds. But it's in a fucking bottle, dude. That's fucking fun as hell, honestly. I'm with Kissel now, actually.
Well, the thing is about this case is that it needed someone clear-headed and laser-focused.
Oh, you needed a good detective.
Yeah.
Well,
you needed someone to oversee this whole thing. It was a gigantic undertaking, and the metastasizing scope of the investigation was far beyond George Oldfield's abilities.
Watching four nans... whose jobs are normally they're boiling sheets and they're stripping fish. But now they're inside of a police station with piles of files just all over the place. There's no computers. Everything's written with a fucking quill. And it's all it's all put everywhere, and no one seems to be chuffed about the job of organizing the information.
But you ever meet one of those hoarders who will be like, oh, yeah, I remember that piece of paper from 1974, and they shuffle through everything and they pull it out?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it was like that.
No. Nope.
No, Nan was not doing that. No, not. Nan was remembering the Blitz. That's all she talked about is like, oh, do you remember the Blitz? And you're like, no, Nan, fucking where is my fingerprint? Shit, where's all my fingerprints?
So By the time Peter Sutcliffe decided to attack again in the summer of 1977, the police were nowhere near catching him, although they would come infuriatingly close almost a dozen times over the next few years. What was even more maddening was the fact that Peter Sutcliffe kept leaving potential murder victims alive, and yet this still did almost nothing to help investigators, even when one of those survivors finally got a good look at her would-be killer's face. On July 9th, 1977, Peter picked up sex worker Maureen Long at 2 a.m. They drove to a vacant lot, and Peter struck her in the head with a claw hammer while she crouched to urinate.
That should be serial killer law. You should never be able to kill somebody while they're going to the bathroom.
That's right. P-zone is safe zone.
He then ripped her dress and stabbed her in the stomach, chest, and back over and over again, using the same knife he'd used in the murder of Jane McDonald. Sure she was dead, Peter then drove off, but Maureen Long survived.
She's like the knight from that, from, oh my God, what is the knight?
Monty Python.
Monty Python.
Oh, does that what it remind you of? Is that what it does? Oh, tis but a flesh wound? Good Lord.
Now, when Maureen did a photo fit on her attacker, she got most of Peter's stronger features correct, like what his eyes looked like, his fucking weird facial hair, and the general shape of his face. But in the details, she couldn't have been more wrong, which again made things difficult for the cops. She said that her attacker was in his late 30s and over 6 feet tall, with curly blonde hair, driving a white Ford Cortina.
Okay.
And she thought she saw Johnny Winter.
Ooh. But it is extremely difficult to judge the age of someone.
It is very difficult, yeah. And of course, she'd also been bladdered in the head with a fucking hammer.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's amazing she remembered as much as she did. But Peter Sutcliffe was in his early 30s. He was about Henry's height, just a tiny bit taller.
Than 5'5".
Yeah.
No, a good, normal.
He was 5'7".
5'7".
Which is still below average.
I don't care. I know that. But it's normal in its way.
It is normal.
And Peter Sutcliffe had wiry, jet black hair. Remember, it looked like a big fucking hedge sitting on a head. Now, he did drive a white Ford, but it was a Corsair. Not a Cortina.
Oh my God, who cares about these details?
It's very important when you're looking for the killer. They've got to be right.
I know, but she was so close.
She was very close.
On so much.
Yeah.
Yeah, but close only counts in fucking horseshoes and assholes, man.
These grenades, hand grenades. But she's taking a squat to piss. So she's looking up. She can't tell if he's 5'7 or 7 feet tall.
No, she had gotten there, but she had gone to the location with him.
She wasn't peeing the whole time.
Also, no. I don't assume somebody's taller just because I'm laying on the ground.
Well, but you it's harder
like,
to tell.
He was 8 feet tall. It's because I'm laying down and like I'm in a ditch.
If you asked Wendy how tall you are, she would just say Empire State Building.
Yes, yes, I am the biggest thing she's ever seen. I'm the biggest man she knows.
Well, this is as soon as George Oldfield announced that she saw a white Cortina at the press conference. It didn't matter anyway, because Sutcliffe stripped his white Corsair for parts, and he bought a red one. He switched it out. George Oldfield should not have said, we're looking for a guy in a fucking white Cortina.
He pulled the old Dianne Feinstein with Ramirez's shoes.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Maureen was so unsure of Peter's overall appearance that she didn't even recognize him when they ran into each other at a local shopping center years later.
Oh my God.
He recognized her, but she looked him straight in the face. He said she had like a flicker of a moment of like, I think I know that guy, and then it was over. It was gone.
Wow.
Can you imagine that, having met now the guy that is obviously, he is a serial killer, and now you see him looking at eggs, and he's over there, you know he's got, you see the hair, you yeah. see the hair, and you see the face, and he's just like, oh, don't look eggs, because they ain't chickens yet. And you have to deal with this fact and be like, do you change grocery stores?
I think you have to. You could also see him bringing a tiny spoon to the egg aisle and just cracking the little eggs on the head.
I don't like his face. I don't like his face.
But again, the failure to capture the Yorkshire Ripper was not for a lack of trying. By the time of Maureen's assault, this is about 5 or 6 murders and 3 or 4 assaults in, there were 300 officers working on this.
Damn.
They'd worked 343,000 hours collectively. And when they released the information about the tall blonde man with curly hair, they'd gotten 117 tips. And they had to follow up on every single one of those tips.
That must have destroyed the UK hairspray fucking sales for the year. And oh. all these blonde guys not being able to tease it up. Because that's how you get women to come. They have to see above the other men's hairs.
Absolutely. And you know there was a bunch of kids who were bullied by the lacrosse playing by the beautiful lacrosse players of their high school, and they're just like, yes, I knew they were all murderers.
Well, the problem was the description of a tall blonde with curly hair mm-hmm. was all wrong. And again, the West Yorkshire police would search for the Ripper using false assumptions and half-truths, and would therefore follow the wrong trails again and again for entirely too long.
Okay, so this is one of those, this is very interesting.
Yeah.
Because we talk about how cops haven't taken sex workers' words seriously. In this case, they did, but she was so traumatized and probably has brain problems, damage, that they did, but it didn't work out.
It didn't work out.
So I guess to sympathize a little bit with how difficult it is to be a police officer or a detective, you get a lot of information.
Yeah.
They had a lot of information, and so they were, obviously, especially because after the last murder, everyone went into a massive panic, because now you're seeing that, because everyone for a while was kind of lulled into this sort of complacency of like, they're only attacking sex workers, it's not going to spill over to the rest of society.
Right.
And you see an innocent, beautiful young woman is murdered, as it happens again and again, and yeah. now everybody cares. Now
of
that
course.
Someone from their side of the railroad tracks has been murdered, now they're invested, and so there's all these people throwing shit into the pot, and they are desperate to solve this crime. So yep. they are running up every flag that they get to see what sticks. I'm mixing a lot of metaphors. And it turns out none of the flags were super sticky.
So they're not coming on the flags. Is that what you're saying?
No comes on these flags.
Okay.
Well, meanwhile, Peter and Sonia had moved out of Sonia's parents' house and bought a home of their own at number 6 Garden Lane in Bradford.
Okay.
And Peter celebrated this milestone by traveling to Manchester's red light district to commit a murder.
You gotta have your neighbors over. You got new neighbors, barbecue.
Yeah, get some cake, man. Get a keg.
Come on.
At about 9 p.m. on October 1st, their first night in the new house, Peter picked up a girl named Jean Jordan, and they agreed upon a fee of £5 for a sexual encounter, which Peter paid for with a crisp £5 note from his latest pay packet. The two then drove to a spot just beyond Southern Cemetery in Chorlton and parked the car.
Love Chorlton.
You'll have. I'm a big fan of Chorlton.
I love Chorlton. I love their Glorsk. When you go down to Chorlton, make sure you get their cold stew that's filled with old clams. Their Gorsk is some of the best Gorsk I've had outside of Glimp.
Yep.
Chorlton's incredible. What a great place. Have you seen the Sludge Factory?
Oh, I love that. And I've been a fan of the Chorlton Glumpers for a long time. Just one of the better squash teams of all time.
I love a game of shitball more than anybody else, and the Glumps are just the creme of the crimps.
Yeah. Oh, Tony forgot his shitball again. Oh, I'll make another one.
I'm sorry, I gotta pop it. I gotta fucking pop it. Like, I'm making myself puke, but I'm a fucking...
Now, Peter had gotten rid of his old claw hammer after Maureen Long had survived, just in case the cops came calling. But when he moved into his new house at Garden Lane, he found that the previous occupant had left behind a ball peen hammer.
And this is not a sign.
And it was this implement that Peter Sutcliffe was carrying that night. Once they got out of the car, Peter pointed to a greenhouse 30 yards away and said they could go there to complete their transaction, claiming the abandoned building full of broken glass belonged to his uncle.
Absolutely, and there's no place better to go and have sex with a sex worker than in a building made out of windows.
Yeah, what is going on here?
When Jean Jordan began climbing a fence to get to the greenhouse, though, Sutcliffe swung the hammer and hit her again and again in the head. But before he could get to his now standard mutilation, Peter saw headlights coming towards him. So he dragged the body into the nearby bushes and fled. But as he drove away, he remembered that he'd given Gene a crisp new five-pound note from his wage packet, which could possibly be traced back to him personally. And he knew at this point Gene Jordan was absolutely dead.
So was there just another John driving by the broken glass factory to have sex with a sex worker that night?
Quite possibly.
Maybe. Who knows?
Jeez.
But at that point, it was too late for Peter to go back because he thought that maybe those people who were driving by had spotted the body. Or at the very least, someone would have started looking for the missing girl. But no one would report Jean Jordan missing. They figured she'd just gone back to Scotland for a little while. They called her Scotch Jean, was her nickname. And she would just go between West Yorkshire and Scotland back and forth. So they just figured, yep, she's taken off again. So nobody reported her missing at all.
I wonder if she's as generous as Scotch Henry, as when around 11:45 p.m. when Scotch Henry emerges from the couch and begins to online shop. Somebody bought a jumpsuit last night.
You got one?
I bought a jumpsuit last night, not a velour jumpsuit. I'm talking a full, like, I'm going to have to take it off completely to shit jumpsuit. Because old Scotch Henry, he had a sparkle in his eye for something new, something fashion forward.
Does it have footies on it?
No, I'm not. I'm not a special needs janitor. It's a cool hipster, this thing. We'll see. I don't know what I'm going to do with it. I'm going to look like a fucking Oompa Loompa who's a plumber.
Now, while you might think Peter would be pleased that no one had discovered the body, you'd be wrong. See, for Peter, seeing the murder reported in the paper and knowing others would have had to deal with the aftermath of his cruelty was all a part of the game. It didn't even really matter if it was attached to the Yorkshire Ripper. All that mattered is that people saw it, people found it, people got freaked out.
This is where the holes in Peter Sutcliffe's own vision of his crimes come in. In the book Wicked Beyond Belief, Peter Sutcliffe does very detailed statements about his crimes and the way he does it. But he does it kind of in an offhanded, what he views, and I think, you know, because we talked about last episode how he thinks he's the fucking guy, right? He thinks he's the coolest fucking knife-slinging serial killer in the world. And so when he... with his victims, he doesn't real like... because it comes off as... he just straight up, they just make me mad... that's why I do it. And then I don't think about it ever again. I just fucking kill him and then it's over. But you start seeing, like, no, especially with this crime in particular, he has a very detailed fantasy life within his own brain. And he loves seeing the panic caused by his crimes. And so what Marcus said, this is just an extension. Him seeing all of the hullabaloo, I'm going to use the word hullabaloo.
Okay,
about
all right.
His crimes is a part of, it's, I mean, I'm certain that he at least jerked off a couple of times thinking about it.
Yeah.
I'm sure.
Well, when days went by and Gene...
well, I would think so.
Yeah, of course.
I'm
of course.
Sure.
That's what they do. I mean, have we ever covered a serial killer that hasn't read their own press? Is there any serial killer out there that doesn't like
Richard
this?
Chase?
Yeah, Richard Chase.
But Richard Chase couldn't read. Richard Chase couldn't see anything other than colors.
Well, Richard Chase is the anomaly in every fucking category. And if you want to read more about Richard Chase, you can read a chapter about him in Last Book on the Left.
Yep.
Now 2 weeks. On the New York Times bestseller list.
York Times bestseller list. Amazing.
Well, when days went by and the Gene Jordan murder was still undiscovered, Peter returned to the body. It had been the night of Peter and Sonia's housewarming party for number 6 Garden Lane. And that night had been a typical battle of wills between Sonia and the other Sutcliffes.
Is this the party where they had people over? And apparently Sonia... Sonia's an interesting woman, right? She's a unique woman. And one of her favorite things in the world, one of the ways that she expressed herself was pottery.
Yeah.
Oh. And what she did, we're going to call it alternative pottery. She just made it all look like fucking gnocchi with pussies in them, right? Just cylinders. She just made a bunch of Whoville fucking vases in their home. And Peter Sutcliffe, now, which is a weird moment in his side life, where he's inviting people home. Sonia's inside, and he's like, listen, what I'd like you guys to do is just, like, don't make fun of her for the pottery. Because, and they're like, we going to. It's something we want to do. We'd be super chuffed about it. If F and me, we could be talking about the pottery. And they walk in the house because it literally just looks like Tim Burton. If Tim Burton got hit in the head by a piece of an airplane and art directed their home, that is so that's where the tension came
the
from.
The tension was because she was a bad potterist?
Well, it was not just that. I mean, it was like the little domestic things where she had made potatoes for everyone, and the Sutcliffes apparently fucking love potatoes. She didn't make enough potatoes.
Nope.
So when she went out to
know the clumps were coming over.
So when she went out to like make more potatoes, she was too fast with it. She didn't cook the potatoes all the way through. So when Mick went and tried to stab the potato with the fork, the potato flew off the fucking plate.
You want
to
heat it up? Why don't you shove it up your ass?
So all night it's just jokes. It's just potato jokes.
Wow.
This is embarrassing.
Wow.
I don't like when me potatoes are too stiff. I'm going for a drive.
This is unbelievable. I think that they're being a little rude to this poor woman.
Yeah.
Leave her alone.
Sure.
We'll see later whether Sonia is culpable or not. I'm not so convinced that Sonia truly deserves our sympathy.
Well.
Yeah.
So, after dropping off his family, after the party, and tired of waiting for someone to discover the body, plus anxious to retrieve that 5-pound note, Peter returned to the body of Jean Jordan 9 days after killing her.
Oh, my God. So, what do we have? What's decomposition after 9 days?
You were in the putrefaction stage
so
at
it's
this
pretty,
point.
It's pretty wet.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's getting soft.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. He's dig. So this is like the worst Double Dare. What was that game where you had to dig across, like all that? Was that Double Dare to get the flags?
Yeah.
You had to go through
the goop, all the
he's
goop.
He's going through for $5.
It's like if someone did an episode of Double Dare, but like during the worst parts of Vietnam, just crawling through the putrefied bodies of VCs and an old your old buddy Private Tennessee.
Oh, and the poor host. He has OCD. He doesn't like to get dirty. Mark Summers. Love Mark Summers.
Well, this wasn't just to get $5 back. He knew that that $5 note, it was brand new. He'd just gotten it. He knew that that note might have been traced back to him.
Right.
So he's trying to evade capture here.
Yes.
But he also wanted to make sure that everybody discovered the body. So he dragged the decomposing corpse out of the bushes and searched the clothes for the note, but found nothing. So, in a frustrated rage, he pulled out his knife and started stabbing the corpse in the chest.
Jeez.
Then he picked up a piece of broken glass from the nearby greenhouse and slashed the body from the right knee to the left shoulder, opening the stomach, which spewed forth a cloud of noxious gases. Oof. That caused Peter to vomit then and there. After composing himself, Peter came up with a new idea. In order to confuse the police, Peter tried removing the head from the corpse, using first a hacksaw he'd brought, then the piece of glass he'd used to open the stomach. But Peter found that the head is the most difficult body part to remove.
Yeah.
So he finally gave up, kicked the body a few times, and drove home, leaving the body out in the open to be found the next morning.
Hmm.
When the body was found, it was so mutilated and decomposed that the detective who arrived on the scene thought at first that somebody had robbed a nearby grave from Charlton and desecrated the corpse.
I would have believed it was from Charlton if they only were 400 pounds, but it's too skinny to be from Charlton. He's got far too many worms inside his belly, because that's all they eat over there. And that horrid, horrid town of Charlton, I wish would just sink into the very ground.
I think Chorton's full of wonderful people. Salt of the earth, folks.
I can't wait for our next special live from Chorlton.
And now Henry will perform his famous I'm a pig joke.
I'm a pig and I like to snort.
Oh my.
I'm a pig and I like to jort.
That was the best show I've ever seen in my life.
But this was soon ruled a murder. And further search of the area 5 days later revealed Jean Jordan's handbag and the elusive 5-pound note from Peter Sutcliffe.
He didn't think to look in her purse?
He had thrown it off into the distance.
But
like
he
had just thought, it was dark, he didn't have a flashlight,
right.
He didn't know where he'd thrown it, and he probably also forgot that he tossed the handbag. It was 9 days later, he probably forgot she even had a fucking handbag in the first place.
Well, where else do you think that she would have put the money?
Hey, she got pockets.
Does she
got pockets?
No, you know the conspiracy. They don't give women pockets, so they have to buy purses.
He said often that he would blank out, which I actually kind of agree. I think that he probably did. I think that in the haze of the sexual release of the crime, his head's not in the game.
Yeah.
And so when something like that detail happens, but didn't they also find it with some weird thing where it's like when they examine the body, it had like nighttime worms. Like there's two different types of like worms in it. There are like daytime worms and nighttime worms. And they found that the ones that should have been in the dark side were flipped up.
Yeah. And they were also I mean, if we really want to get into the nitty gritty of the forensics here, they were able to tell that he had returned to the body and stabbed it after she had already died, because the eggs of the maggots in the wounds were too young to be from the initial murder.
And they were traumatized. And they had to go and bring a grief counselor to those young maggots just so that they could get through maggot high school.
I know.
To go to maggot college and join the president's administration.
I hear you that. And it's easy to tell a nighttime worm from a daytime worm because the nighttime worms got their bell bottoms on. They got nice fancy shirts on like Joe Exotic. They are ready to party.
Yes.
Because that 5-pound note was brand new, the Ripper Task Force figured it'd be a simple thing to track down where it came from. And if they figured out where it came from, that would help them narrow down the list of suspects in the Ripper killing.
Okay.
And this wasn't a bad idea at all, because this method had been successfully tried in another murder case in Manchester not too long before this. Unfortunately, though, this effort only widened the scope. After tracing the note back to the Leeds branch of the Bank of England, it was determined that it was sent out in one of 6,000 pay packets distributed amongst 34 firms, one of which employed Peter Sutcliffe as a truck driver. But even so, detectives still interviewed all 6,000 men.
Damn.
6,000.
This is just a this is a tiny sliver of this entire fucking operation.
You know, at least they're trying.
They are. They tried their asses off. They just didn't have the leadership that they needed.
Well, he's robo-tripping listening to Wiz Khalifa or something.
It's hard when you're your own radio station.
Yeah.
To be a police constable.
And of course, in this interview sweep was Peter Sutcliffe. But when he was interviewed, Peter had alibis for both the night Jean Jordan was murdered and for the night she was mutilated.
Well, he could just make anything up, right?
Sonia vouched for him. She said he was home all night, both nights.
If only if he never mentions the potato incident again.
Well, that's how it goes. Apparently, I mean, she just said it because she had her weird night thing. So she'd leave half the time and she's not really certain where he is. But during that specific interview, he just like looked at her. He's like, "Oh no, I was home, right? I was home all night, right?" And she went, "Yeah." Meanwhile, she's making a new fucking huge dildo looking thing that I guess is supposed to be a towel rack.
Now, Sonia lying wasn't necessarily a failing of the cops. But the investigating officers did neglect to write down that Peter had previously owned a white Ford Corsair.
Mm.
And they also failed to search Peter's home. They also ignored Peter's new red Ford Corsair. If they had examined that, they would have discovered that the tire tracks found near Jean Jordan's body would have been a perfect match for Peter Sutcliffe's red Corsair, which blinked with the 5-pound note given out in Peter Sutcliffe's pay packet. That would have sunk Peter Sutcliffe.
There was, what's interesting, I guess, is that he left no hair at the scene, huh?
Well, I mean, he must have had that thing on lockdown.
His head? he must have that thing on lockdown.
This is 1978. Like, there's not DNA, there's no DNA tests available at this time. Yeah, the hair doesn't really mean that much.
I've got to tell you, Captain Oldfield, this is the first time I've ever found a square hair.
But the thing was that there was just too much information to sluice through. It was like, see, the computational techniques that we pioneered here in America, the techniques that have kept our serial killer count relatively low in recent history, all that shit was still in its infancy in the late 70s. What that meant was that the cops working the Yorkshire Ripper case were dealing with hundreds of thousands of note cards and written reports, and nobody was able to put all the information together in any meaningful way. And just to give you a sense of how much power computers give investigators and why killers no longer reach numbers in the 20s and 30s, the simple command of Control F in a database of suspects would have shown investigators every single time Sutcliffe showed up in a sweep. But as it was, none of the major operations to find the Yorkshire Ripper, like the five-pound note inquiry, were ever cross-referenced with the ones that came before or after. And since every operation was done by a different team, Peter slipped through the cracks again and again. Today, he would have been caught by two keys on a keyboard.
Damn.
Damn, that fast. Honestly, I really do think that fast at this point.
Yeah, I mean, then the detective who's robo-tripping can just get back to having fun.
Well, as such, Peter committed another murder on January 21st, 1978. With Yvonne Pearson, Sutcliffe struck her over the head with his hammer 17 times and stuffed handfuls of horsehair down her throat to keep her quiet as a car drove by during the murder. He then kicked her repeatedly and finally killed her by jumping on her chest with both feet, crushing her internal organs. But this one was not considered a Ripper murder, despite the brutality, because Yvonne Pearson had not been, in effect, ripped.
So you're seeing his rage escalate. And the more and more things go, and the less and less, like every single time they come and speak to him and he is not caught, the more confident he gets. Right. And the more he starts to feel like, I can get away with anything.
And you know, one detective showed up and was like, well, her stomach was jumped upon. Where's Yosemite Sam? Is Yosemite Sam around? Because if I see him, he's going to be in cuffs. He's now a suspect number one.
But the next victim, Helen Ritka, would surely be included in the Ripper's murder count.
It is so weird that they took the Ripper, like, they took that so literally.
Yeah.
Where they're like, but what about the ball pin hammer?
No, that's the thing, is that if it so was if only halfway, then I don't know how many people were being murdered with fucking ball pin hammers in West Yorkshire at this time, but if there was no knife involved, then it was not sent to the task force.
Jeez.
They didn't know what the hell. I don't know if it's that they didn't know what the hell they were doing. They got caught up in the specifics because they were trying to figure out a way to narrow it down.
Right.
So they're like, well, it can't possibly be a Ripper crime because the Ripper rips. And so they just kind of pushed that one out to try to see if they could get other people. Meanwhile, people just keep getting murdered.
And if you notice here, Detective Sampson, this is a tear. So this would not be Yorkshire Ripper. yes.
Normally, a rip takes a ripper.
Uh-huh.
Now, this is a stomp up. And I don't say I was going after no stompings, so we're going after rippers.
Okay.
Well, I mean, they just tried to keep narrowing their focus as much as humanly possible. But, you know, that gives you tunnel vision. Yep. And any good detective will tell you that tunnel vision is the detective's worst enemy.
Tunnel vision is also what you get when you robo-trip.
Yeah, tunnel vision's also one of the best songs by fucking, I believe it's...
Foreigner.
Foreigner, yeah, man. I fucking love tunnel vision.
No, wait, we're thinking of double vision.
Double vision! Fuck yeah, dude. Fucking rocking it, man. Feeling good, dude.
All right. All of our nieces and nephews out there, if you haven't checked out Foreigner's Double Vision, stop this right now. Push play on Spotify.
Well, with Helen Ritka, Peter left 6 stab wounds in the rib cage and heart before covering the body with a sheet of asbestos. He then went home, sponged the blood off his shoes, and put the knife he just used to murder a woman back in the kitchen drawer for Sonia to use.
Oh my God.
To add insult to homicide, though, before Ritka's body was discovered, men working in the lumberyard next to the murder site found her discarded panties on a blood-stained patch of ground. But rather than report it, they nailed the panties to the door of a shed as a laugh.
I think America gets a lot of shit. Right? I think we get a lot of shit for saying that we're big, fat, loud, classless, and armed.
Sure.
And I think that a lot of it's correct.
Yeah.
But I think that the UK scumbag is unique and in its own way, and it has its own horrible stripes between shitting and pissing in graves and just taking a pair of bloody panties and nailing it like it's a messiah to the wall. I don't think it's, I'm not laughing.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with you.
Well, after Ritka's body was discovered by the police, the authorities put even more men on the case. They set up the Special Homicide Investigation Team, a.k.a. the Shit Squad.
Uh-oh, Shit Squad's here.
They put Detective Chief Superintendent John DeMail in charge. But the Shit Squad had...
Uh-oh, Shit Squad's here.
They had no idea how truly bizarre and specific Peter Sutcliffe's habits had become. See, after Sutcliffe was arrested, police made an incredible discovery once they stripped him down, something that Peter never mentioned in any of his confessions and something that was never brought up in trial.
Is this going to be a big reveal?
This is the fact that I say is my favorite serial killer tidbit I've heard in a long time.
See, when cops searched Sutcliffe's person after he was caught, they discovered that the Yorkshire Ripper's underwear was stuffed in his coat pocket, which struck the police as somewhat odd.
Yeah, because, well, he wore a long, brown, gross jacket when he'd go out to do his deeds, and he'd cut holes in the pockets so he could keep his hammer and his knife and, I guess, just his loose underwear in the lining of his jacket.
So he's like Howard Stern after he had the affair and he put it in the glove box. Remember that? And his wife found it?
I remember that.
Yeah. WNBC.
Pig vomit.
The underwear in the pocket only made sense after Peter was stripped down. Once his pants were off, police discovered that the Yorkshire Ripper wore a special undergarment that he changed into before every murder. Peter Sutcliffe had modified a V-neck sweater to work as a pair of leggings. What would normally serve as the arms were pulled over Peter's legs, leaving the V-neck to fully expose his genitals so they could be easily accessed at any time. Furthermore, Peter had also affixed reinforced padding into the arms of the V-neck in the spots where his knees would have been, meaning the Yorkshire Ripper had developed a full apparatus to comfortably kneel and masturbate at crime scenes.
Can you imagine the vision of stripping a Yorkshire man, a working class man, who is not washed in any way, shape, or form? One of the great unwashed is what they called him when they found him. He's just like, "You sure you want me undress?" Because that's how they talk about it. He's just like, "Do I got to?" And they're like, "Yes, you do." And he slowly, embarrassingly reveals his special Mormon underwear that he has with his full Yorkshire fucking hair-covered dick and balls hanging out of a J. Crew fucking V-neck under his pants. All, you know, it's all fucking crusted over.
Oh,
and it was
disgusting.
It was like his Superman underwear that he'd wear to go out. And there's something about this because we know that he masturbated.
Yeah.
At the crime scene.
Yeah, we know he did because semen was found near some of the bodies.
But he never talked about this, right?
He never mentioned this little detail in any of his confessions at all.
Part of me thinks the reason why that he didn't mention it or doesn't talk about it, why all the cops didn't talk about it, was because Peter Sutcliffe imagined a fake masculinity. Like, it goes back to the very beginning where he said that prostitutes used to, like, you know, have sex with him for free. And they used to love it, right? And this concept of they are less than him and just the sheer attraction to this woman makes him like less of a man. So there's something about this process and him admitting that I am attracted to sex workers and I love the idea. I love them. They are looser, freer, like they are a freer woman than anybody I'm married to because they'll do all the fucked up shit that I want them to do, quote unquote. I think that I would. But
and
I just murder them. And then I made special underwear. I went that far to sew in knee pads into a sweater so I can include this as a part of my sexual function.
But long before this was discovered, Peter Sutcliffe would commit murder again and again and again. Now, the Shit Squad was trying to...
Shit Squad's here!
Making this morning radio today. I'm doing this.
Now, they were trying their best to surveil the red light areas in West Yorkshire, and this again led them back to Peter Sutcliffe. The squad kept watch on red light districts in Leeds, Bradford, and Manchester, and Peter Sutcliffe's Red Corsair showed up 7 times in multiple areas in less than a month, so another interview was scheduled. However, Peter was only one interview of thousands, and these interviews were done in about the most British way you can imagine.
Yeah. Uh-oh. How much tea was involved? How many crumpets?
A lot of tea was involved.
Yes. See, that's the thing with American detectives and FBI. They don't take anything that you offer them. They refuse to do it.
No.
See, none of the men interviewed were told they'd been seen in a red light district, and the officers were instructed to be absolutely discreet with the wives of said suspects. These cops said they lived by one phrase: softly, softly, catchy the monkey.
What? I'm sorry, what was that?
Softly, 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 catchy the monkey.
Now, did this come straight up from the detective, the lead detective who's robo-tripping right now, wearing his underwear on his head?
Softly, softly.
This is uniquely British, because the U.S., we did not do anything softly. Our law enforcement is very loud, as a matter of fact.
Very loud.
Oh, it gets even more British than that. What this meant was that they had to do their investigation while also being careful to not antagonize the marriages of 22,000 Yorkshiremen who'd driven through a red light district for one reason or another. Just because you drove through...
One reason or another! Just because you drove... You know what I mean?
I mean,
you
yeah.
have to... Sometimes the red light district is right by a great Popeyes and you gotta get the chicken sandwich.
Yeah, just because you're in the red light district, just because you drive through there doesn't necessarily mean you were there for a lady.
Yeah, it's like when
yeah,
we drove
Yeah, I mean,
through...
I ended up on all these websites on accident. I've said this how many times I've said the two bosses of places I've worked. I mean, like, all of this was an accident. I was just driving through this lesbian schoolgirl university. I was looking at it to see my daughter. Where will my daughter
really?
Go to school?
Well, in order to do this discreetly, the cops would usually distract the wife by asking her to go make them all a cup of tea.
Oh, my goodness.
And in the 5 minutes or so when she was out of the room, the cops would quickly interrogate the subject as to whether or not they were purchasers of affection. The rule was never ask about it if the wife was around.
They also shouldn't have been interviewing these guys in front of their wives to begin with.
No.
But, okay.
It's just weird how they had... Well, it's because it's a family affair and the cops are coming. It's a big deal. It's Yorkshire.
Sure.
You're excited to see the constable. He comes around and, you know, he's got his wig on. I'm not certain. I don't think they had wigs. I think barristers have wigs. But they walk into the, but the, just this idea of having to soft pedal all of these people and just being
yeah.
like, hello, they make yourself a cup of tea. Hey, all right. Because he first would ask for a cup of water, which would turn immediately into a cup of tea. So they would go and make the tea and they'd be like, you tell me out there, oh boy, it's between you and me there, buddy. What have you been doing over there? What you doing? Like, and they're like, eh, and they're like rubbing elbows with each other. And it's like, there's a fucking serial killer.
Yeah.
Literally ripping through the countryside.
Good Lord, it's like Simon Pegg from
Hot Fuzz?
From Hot Fuzz mm-hmm. and Shaun of the Dead wrote these goddamn cops characters. They're ridiculous.
Now, this non-confrontational approach to police work probably wasn't the best way to go about things.
No, definitely not.
But at the very least, cross-referencing names with previous suspect lists might have given investigators something to work with. Unfortunately, though, that didn't happen.
Mm.
When Sutcliffe was questioned in this sweep, the officer had no idea that this was actually Peter Sutcliffe's 3rd interview concerning the Ripper case, because no cross-referencing had been done.
Now, I thought that when the shit squad was finished with the interview, one officer would take a little dump right outside the door so that then all the other officers would know, oh, we already got that one. There should have been 2 dumps outside.
Oh, it's the office. They've already had a shite visit yes. here.
And so, Sutcliffe was again able to evade suspicion. And on April 4th, 1970, he murdered another woman outside of the sex work business, which naturally increased the volume of public outcry.
So, he is not getting deterred by this.
No, not at all.
I mean,
no.
It's interesting. These cops, you know those new Heineken commercials with the Heineken 0.0? And then they have, like, the guy getting pulled over with the Heineken bottle, and then they have a good laugh because there's no alcohol in it, but in reality, you get pulled from your car and you get beat up no matter
fucking
what.
Fucking wailed on, exactly. Yeah, dragged down the street.
I guess it was more of that reality for him, where it was like, oh, this is fine. These cops aren't even against me. They're kind of friends. It just seems like at some point you would have a chilling effect to be like, okay.
Well, he figures out real fast that all he has to do is stonewall the cops and say, nope, wasn't there. My wife says that I wasn't there, and she'll say, like, yep, nope, he wasn't there. He was there with me. And then the cops, they have so many people to interview, so many people to get through that they're just, I mean, they're in a daze. How many, that he was probably, what, the 50th person they'd interviewed that day? 60th?
This is also, I made the joke last week about it being kind of like Hobbiton, but Yorkshire is a really nice part of the UK. There's not, like, there, yes, it has rough patches, but it's honestly a really nice spot. So I think there's also a little bit of being like, we're not trying to ruffle too many feathers
right.
here mm-hmm. by really stiff-arming people because they're British and they don't want to spoil the crumpets. Tension in the air actually will ruin a scones.
It will. Heard that.
Well, for his next murder, Sutcliffe followed 19-year-old Josephine Whittaker into a field where she usually took a shortcut to her grandmother's house. He asked her the time, and when she told him, after looking at a faraway clock tower, Peter congratulated her on her good eyesight before thwacking her twice with a hammer. Mm. Suddenly, though, across the field, people saw two people walking towards them. So he dragged Josephine, still alive and softly moaning, further away from the road. And as the figures drew closer, Peter pulled out his screwdriver and stabbed Josephine 9 times in the front, 12 times in the back, and an untold number of times in the vagina.
So he's back to the fucking screwdriver?
Yes. He goes back and forth between the screwdriver and the knife.
And he
made this a weapon. Like, he purposely made it sharper in order to do this. So it shows more of his weird premeditation.
But he always has the hammer.
Always. Never once does he murder without the hammer.
I feel like that should be the tool that the cops are focusing on. Not the knife, but...
Then, Sutcliffe left a bite mark on her breast that was unmistakably his, because the 1/8-inch gap between his two front teeth was clear to the forensics team who later examined the body.
It's also how you can always tell if Ernest Borgnine got to your sandwich before you got to it.
11 days before this incident occurred, though, the cops thought that they'd finally caught a break, when they suddenly found themselves thrust into a narrative that seemed straight out of Victorian England. See, in mid-1978, both head investigator George Oldfield and the Sunday Mirror received letters reminiscent of Jack the Ripper's famous missives sent almost 100 years before. While neither letter had the flair of Jack's Dear Boss letter, they still sounded legit, even if they are pretty trite. It's your pretty typical, like, I'll kill them whores, you know, that sort
right.
of shit. Like, it was nothing special. It was no fucking Son of Sam letter, I'll tell
right.
you that much.
No, it's just...
No,
what, it's
it didn't... It wasn't creatively written. As a matter of fact, there's actually... And there are some sentences that were straight up lifted from the old Jack the Ripper letters, mm-hmm. put inside of his letters. So, you know, it's very interesting.
Probably just sounded like the mumblings of Robert Wagner before he killed Natalie Wood. Just whatever he was saying. You know when you're high on cocaine and also hammered but trying to tell secrets, but no one else is around?
Sir, you're yelling. I know that's a secret because what you said is horrible. You're yelling it.
I'm going to throw her off the goddamn end of the bridge, man. I'm going to throw her off the boat. You know.
I can hear from across the room.
Yeah, you can hear that? Oh, goddamn. I think I'm talking out loud. Can they hear me? Oh, goddamn it.
Well, I can hear you, sir. Sir, you are frightening me. I'm going to have to ask you to leave this Chili's.
Well, in addition to them sounding legit, semen found near the body of Joan Harrison was from a B blood type secretor, which matched the saliva from the envelope sent to the cops and the media. So they're thinking this is legit. They're thinking this is real.
Yeah, it's actually one of my favorite guns too, the B blood type secretor. It is. It's powerful. It shoots one really droopy bullet, but powerful, powerful bullet.
Now, this was all kept a secret in 1978, but when another letter arrived a year later, along with an audio tape, George Oldfield was desperate enough to release both of them to the public. This is an edited version of the tape in question.
I'm Jack. I see you are still having no look catching me. I have the greatest respect for you, George. Good Lord. You are no nearer catching me now. Than 4 years ago when I started. I reckon your boys are letting you down, George. They can't be much good, can they? The only time they came near catching me was a few months back in Chapeltown when I was disturbed. I warned you in March that I'd strike again. Sorry it wasn't Bradford. I'm not quite sure when I'll strike again. body will be definitely sometime this year. I am not sure where. Maybe Manchester. I like it there. There's plenty of them knocking about. They never learn, do they, George? I bet you've warned them, but they never listen. Well, it's been nice chatting to you, George. Yours, Jack the Ripper.
Hello, I'm Dylan Thomas, and I am here to cast you in the Yorkshire version of Under Milkwood. This is wonderful. Your accent is exactly what we're going for. We did Under Milkwood in high school, or in college, rather, from UW Stout in Menominee, Wisconsin. You can imagine how horrible our acting
is. I would love to have seen that. Just you as a tree?
I was a detective who took a dump in a hat. That's true.
Now, that wasn't how the tape actually ended. We just heard an edited version of it. Instead, the last line said, "Hope you like the catchy tune at the end." And that statement was followed by this song. And I'm being absolutely serious here.
Oh, my God.
Thank you for being a friend. Travel down a road and back again. Your heart is true, you're a pal and a confidant.
You know the lead detective robo-tripping right now is just like loving this.
This is a good song, I like it.
Yeah. Thank you for being a friend.
Wow.
Of course, later the theme song for Golden Girls.
And if you do party and invited everyone you
knew.
Honestly, it's such a catchy song.
It's a great song. I'm always and always will be Team Blanche.
You are a fucking Blanche.
I'm a Raphael and I'm a Blanche. I just watched TMNT, the 1990 movie.
Yeah.
I think Raphael is, I was formed.
Yeah. No, yeah. We know this. Yeah. We know this.
And I think maybe the other Ninja Turtles should have listened to Leonardo a little bit more.
Yeah, if they wanted to have no fun. Yeah, if they wanted to have zero fun. Also, they wouldn't have meant Casey Jones without Raphael being out there.
I do feel like, though, Michelangelo, like, would have eaten a Tide Pod. Like, he would have accidentally poisoned himself at some point.
Now, how George Oldfield took this song was that the Ripper saw him as a friend, an equal.
What a creative way to take that song.
I mean,
that's like a little on the nose, don't you think?
It's a fair assumption to make, because the men who eventually lured Dennis Rader into making the mistake that got him caught, they did the exact same thing almost 30 years later.
Yeah, send us an email. Yeah, I can't wait to talk to you. Yeah.
Yeah. But the problem here was that neither the tapes nor the letters were sent by Peter Sutcliffe. In reality, the communications had been sent by an abusive alcoholic named John Humble, nicknamed John the Bag, because he'd always have a sack of strong cider slung over his shoulder.
He would have just been a Howard Stern. He would have been a Howard Stern call-in character.
Yeah, John the Bag is in the Whack Pack.
He's in the Whack Pack. Absolutely, they would have called him. But John Humble is a sad fuck. And I watched a documentary on him, and it is very, very sad that he is just one of those people. When they ask the reason why you do this,
yeah,
we'll talk a little bit more about him in a little bit from now. But I think it's interesting how he was driven by subconscious forces to do something like this as a way to make himself feel like he matters, right? As a way for him to stick his head into the most, I'm going to say, almost sociopathic way,
yeah,
where he just kind of joins in on this conversation as an almost, in my mind, a psychic completion of the story of Jack the Ripper and of a new Jack the Ripper, where it's almost like Jack Ruby, where in a way, the way history functions, these people arrive to fill slots in history. They just kind of show up, and then all of a sudden, welcome to the story.
Right.
You just joined in and you righteously fucked it up, but for some reason the universe brings all of these things together to make it an exact parallel. Like the Jack the Ripper parallel is so interesting because it's exactly the same, except, you know, they got Peter Sutcliffe.
All right, Mr. Ruby, we're casting you in the JFK assassination situation. Oh, what's my line? Oswald!
Oswald!
All right, all right.
Well, John the Bag was from Sunderland.
John the Bag.
I love John the Bag.
It's the saddest nickname I've ever. You get it? Because I got a big bag.
Well, he was from Sunderland, what the English call a Geordie. And because Oldfield was absolutely convinced that the tape and the letters were authentic, the task force operated under the false assumption that the Yorkshire Ripper was from Sunderland for a good chunk of time.
Oh, man.
And it was this false assumption that allowed Peter Sutcliffe to slip through the net once again in the summer of 1979.
So this guy's little joke led to the murder of, what, probably four more people?
Four more, yeah.
Oh my
yeah, four
God.
More people, and he knew it. Yeah. He knew what he, we knew it, that it was going on, and it caused him to, he did attempt to commit suicide.
Mm-hmm. Let's see, Sutcliffe had traded in his Corsair for a Sunbeam Rapier, and that car had been seen in the Lum Lane area 36 times.
You don't see a lot of cars with rape in their name.
No, I think the Rapier has sort of been rebranded. I think it's now just called Camry.
Man, when I had my Nissan Gaper in college, oh, I was just one. So it was so yeah, cool yeah, to yeah. drive around my lime green Gaper.
No, I had the Ford Balls Deep, which is really it's great. It's always in four wheel drive though. Kind of frustrating.
But again, the interviewing officer, Detective Andrew Laptu, had no idea that this was now the fifth time that Sutcliffe had been spoken with concerning the Yorkshire Ripper case.
Oh.
Laptu's impression of the people at Number 6 Garden Lane was that Peter and Sonia were unusually quiet and totally lacking in a sense of humor. Because when Laptu tried his standard, "This is your chance to get rid of your husband" joke, neither one cracked a smile. Well, and usually it killed.
I am so mad that these cops had material. They yeah. walked in literally with bits. And you, I, you know, just fucking catch a serial killer, guys.
Yeah.
Stop worrying about it if your jokes are going flat.
No, cop jokes are always horrible because you're the punchline and you getting incarcerated is like the final funniest part.
And Laptu remembered this interaction because Sutcliffe was suspicious. In addition to Peter's visits to Lum Lane, Sutcliffe also resembled a photo fit put together by a surviving victim. And he had that huge 1/8-inch gap in his front teeth. And he had all the right facial hair.
The first time in the world anybody ever said that he had all the right facial hair.
But Peter Sutcliffe obviously had a Bradford accent. And since the entire investigation at that time was operating under the assumption that the Ripper had a Geordie accent, Peter was once again put in an ever-growing follow-up pile and was largely forgotten.
Assumption? You know what that stands for.
That's right.
Yeah. Making an asset of you and me. If you didn't fucking know that, then
Kissel,
yeah,
yes.
Okay, that's what
yeah,
I'm saying.
Yeah, I do fucking know what it means.
Do you know
okay?
what it means? Okay.
But not too long after that, though, George Oldfield, who'd been running himself ragged for years trying to find the Ripper, suffered a heart attack owing to all the cigarettes, booze, and cough syrup. And he never returned to the case.
Oh. I kind of was hoping that he could get some closure, but I guess he lived a heart attack lifestyle.
Yeah, he did.
You just figured that the coughs here would kind of like equalize all the coughing from the cigarettes.
Yeah, maybe that's why he did it. It's called being even. I'm just like even.
But it's not like new leadership led to the capture of the Ripper. It'd be another year and a half before Peter Sutcliffe was caught, and at least two more women would die, while an untold number would be attacked.
Mm.
So, in a wildly desperate attempt to capture the killer, authorities doubled down on the recordings and letters, even though linguistic experts by this point were beginning to question even the authenticity of the Geordie accent. They began a public information campaign called Project R, which broadcast a single message in 300 newspaper ads, 5,000 billboards, and constant radio and television advertisements. It said, quote,
"The man next to you may have killed 12 women. He may be sitting or standing next to you in your pub, club, or canteen, or in a queue, on a bus. He may be working at the next machine, desk, or table. But he is in fact a vicious, deranged maniac whose method of murder and mutilation is so sick that it turned the stomachs of even the most hardened of police officers. Here's how you can help. Look closely at the handwriting. It is the handwriting of a sadistic killer. And if you think you'll recognize it from a note, letter, envelope, signature, check, anything. Report it to your local police. Listen to the killer's voice by phoning Leeds STD 0532464111. You can hear probably the most important clue to the killer's identity. As viewers, it won't be a pleasant experience, but it could lead to the end of the brutal murders. If you think you recognize the voice, tell the police. Help us stop the Ripper from killing again. Look at his handwriting. Listen to his voice.
I just gotta say, that's a lot of words for a billboard. You know, that might cause more accidents than he's killed.
You're driving, yeah, fucking 70 kilometers.
Why is everyone going 1 mile an hour during this road of land?
I mean, imagine listening to the fucking radio and that comes on every 20 minutes or so.
It reminds me of, in these hard times, we here at Nissan, we care about you. And that's why we still will sell you a car.
If I see one more fucking celebrity next to their pool trying to relate to me, why don't you just go swimming?
As we know from the many investigations we've covered, the tactic of opening the investigation to the public almost never works. With, of course, the high-profile exception of Ted Kaczynski.
So it really is not more. In this case, it's not more the merrier. Mm-mm. You want, like, you kind of want less chefs in the old kitchen.
Well, in this case, the cops got 3,000 calls on the first day and 19,000 calls over the first 3 months, which of course needed the allocation of resources to field those calls and resources to follow up on the leads. And it was all based off what was essentially a bad prank.
Honestly, what I think they need there is a relationship counselor, because you know how many girlfriends were just like, "It's Tom." I know. He's like, "Babe, I would never do that, babe."
It's always, we saw it in Son of Sam too. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, this shit comes out of the woodwork, because then it's everybody with a Geordie accent who's also an asshole just gets put on that list.
One merciful break was that John the Bag's conscience finally got the better of him. When he realized just how badly he was fucking everything up, he sent 4 letters to the police and even called to tell everyone that the tape and the letters were a hoax, saying, stop putting resources into this.
It's so sad. It's such a sad waste of everything, of time and energy. His life was a waste.
Yeah.
Like, straight up, he ruined so many people's lives with this dumb little thing that he decided, some weird impulse he decided to follow. But I do love his follow-up calls where he's like, "Stop listening to the chief." Like, he's trying to cover up the voice, and he's like, "The chief will speak. Yeah, watch it." Then he comes out,
"Yeah, this is Ted Koppel calling, saying, yeah, those tapes were a hoax. You need to think about it."
Like, anything but his voice. Just calling and trying to stop the shit.
I don't. So this poor drunk, honestly, he needed Bob and Tom to call into.
Yeah.
He needed a radio show where he could be a local hacky talent.
Well, he didn't own up completely. He didn't go in, throw up his hands, and say, like, "Hey, I was the guy." He didn't get caught for this until 2005.
Oh, shit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What were the charges then?
Interfering with a police investigation. He got 8 years.
Oh, okay.
For this,
well,
yeah.
Honestly, aided and abetted in the murder of a couple
people.
In his
50s,
so,
though.
Yeah.
Damn.
Yeah, because he had gotten arrested for, like, drunken disorderly in 2005. His DNA went into the national database. They checked it against every other sample of DNA that they had. Yeah. And they were like, you're that guy.
You know,
we're going to fuck you up.
In Ireland, you get arrested for drunken orderly. You're like, you better start getting a little crazier. You're being suspect. Yeah. Hello. I'll be here until Tuesday. Then my wife, she's demanding that I go to court.
But even so, like, the voice, like, when he called up and said, like, "Hey, the tape isn't real," that voice matched the voice on the tape that they already had.
"This is Gilbert Gottfried. All I knew to say,
And if he just had channeled some of this into being a radio man, like a voice man.
Yeah.
So if the authorities decided that it might have been a really fucking stupid idea to eliminate suspects based solely on their accent.
And I want to talk about this in the UK in general, how many fucking accents you have.
There's Jesus. So many different types of accents, and they're so specific, each one. And I don't even, I'm going to say, this might be racist against white people.
Uh-huh.
I really can barely tell the difference between a Geordie accent and a Yorkshire accent. I know that they are different, but the fact that, like, well, that's a Geordie accent. This new way comes from over here, because this here's a Lancashire accent.
Oh. Mine is the Manchester accent.
And so they all got different accents, and they're all very proud of them.
Oh, I guess that's the buzzer for character actor gripes to be done. Great new section, which I love.
Well, a problem with them saying that, hey, maybe we shouldn't eliminate people because of the accent, problem with that is that it once again widened the scope of the investigation.
Oh. Now you gotta start all over from the fucking beginning.
4 years after the investigation began, the shit squad had taken almost 25,000 statements, done over 50,000 vehicle checks, made 25,000 house-to-house inquiries, and had interviewed almost 200,000 people.
And ironically, all of those pieces of paper, about as good as toilet paper.
Well, no, not at all. There were plenty of pieces of paper with Peter Sutcliffe's name on it.
Yeah, well, those are the ones you want to keep. That's your double-ply Charmin.
They went to speak to him again and again and again.
And by the time it was all over and done with, Peter Sutcliffe would be interviewed 10 times and would never be a main suspect, despite the fact that he was the only person who showed up in every single major Ripper operation.
Jeez.
But perhaps the multiple interviews had taken a toll on Sutcliffe, because in the summer of 1980, Peter was arrested for drink driving, as they call it in England.
Hmm.
And lost his job as a truck driver.
Oh, that's the problem. Yeah.
Besides that, Peter's domestic life was becoming a quiet hell. Sonia had become obsessed with cleanliness, keeping their entire house encased in plastic. And she refused to sit anywhere outside of the home without dusting and blowing on the area for a full 2 minutes beforehand.
It sounds like me right now going yeah. insane. But it's really, again, and with the pottery and all of the bullshit, I feel like, I'm not going to say she knew, but I am going to say when your husband goes for a long period of time, maybe there was a form of relationship. Maybe there was some type of arrangement where he said, I see prostitutes. And she says, go do it. And that becomes yeah. like a housing thing where he is doing that
uh-huh.
because maybe, who knows? I mean, that's total conjecture.
So,
I have no fucking
so
clue.
You're saying it's but, kind of like a pornographic sixth sense where instead of dead people, he only sees prostitutes.
Well, no, it's the story of the song, you know, let me smell your dick. You have to go and be in like, because you know that dick is smelling weird.
What a song.
Weirder than usual.
Hold on. There's yeah. a song that with the lyrics, let me smell your dick.
Yeah, buddy, it's about cheating.
What song is that?
It's called, I believe it's called Let Me Smell Your Dick.
It is called Let Me Smell. There's a lot of songs called Smell Your Dick.
No kidding.
Yeah, there's one by a woman named Risque.
Uh huh.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Wait, no, never mind. It's the only one. It's just a woman.
It's just
yeah.
one. Okay, well, good for her.
Yeah, a man named Risque, Let Me Smell Your Dick. And it's not like. It's not like a sommelier. She's not looking for top notes and fucking bottom notes. It's about saying whether or not, I mean, I don't know if women can tell the difference between the smell of their own pussy juices and other people's pussy juices. That's a question for our listeners. SideStoriesLTOTL
sure.
at gmail.com. Feel free to answer and can you tell the difference between pussy juices?
I think so they can.
That's just research.
Oh, they can, yeah.
And not too long after losing his job.
Well, they can. They can.
Yeah.
You got the stink of you. You got the stink on you of another lady. They know.
And not too long after losing his job, Peter killed again. This time strangling a woman named Marguerite Walls instead of stabbing her in an attempt to throw the police off the trail.
Hmm.
And in doing this, he succeeded. Since he still used a hammer, but not a knife, the murder of Marguerite Walls was placed in the run-of-the-mill sex worker murder category, and it stayed far away from the shit squad.
Damn.
My question is that do they not feel like hammers should be, like, not sold anymore?
Yeah.
We need to be, like, thinking about hammers, like, how that's, like, a wave. I don't know how many people. I actually also then wonder if there are copycat crimes going on at the same time.
Maybe. But, I mean, I really don't know how many hammer murders there were, or at least hammer attacks there were in the UK. It might have been in the late 70s very common. I don't
Is
know.
Is this before they were allowed to not have guns?
I don't think the British have ever been super gun happy, at least not to our fucking level.
They're stabby.
Yeah, they're very stabby. Yeah.
Like they're stabbing, yeah.
Yeah.
They're in better shape. Yeah. They kind of run around.
Well, not too long after that murder, Peter and Mick, his brother, they went to visit their sister in Morecambe. And of course, Peter had to visit the wax museum.
Oh, yeah. Dude, this wax museum, I got into a hole, man. I want to buy one. I wonder if you can buy one.
And from what Mick said, they went to the museum before going to their sister's place. He couldn't wait. And Peter relished showing his brother diseased penis after diseased penis, when all Mick wanted to do was go to the pub.
This makes me feel for Marcus's brothers.
Yes, absolutely.
Because I know the same arrangement has happened between Marcus and his brothers, where they're like, let's go to the bar, Marcus. You're like, no, look at this medical anomaly.
Yes.
This is great, Marcus. We love your creativity. We think you're super successful. We're super proud of you. Can we go get tacos?
If you don't go to the medical if you don't go look at a bunch of diseased cocks and pussies, what are you going to talk about to alienate everyone at the bar? So you got to go in with ammo.
No, but then you always get this is pre-9/11, so you don't got your fucking 9/11 truth or stuff to talk about. You really can't talk about how aluminum's making all the kids gay. It's
right.
Very difficult. All you can do to really ruin a dinner in the 1970s is to shit in your pants.
Yeah, that's true.
Then on November 17th, 1980, Peter Sutcliffe committed his last murder. Now, as far as the shit squad was concerned...
Shit squad's here.
There hadn't been a Ripper murder in almost a year, and the news had been pretty quiet as well. So, everyone's guard was down. And on that night, Peter Sutcliffe saw Jacqueline Hill exit a bus as he was elbow deep in a bucket of KFC.
Terrible commercial for KFC.
Very bad. You know, he ran for Senate. The
Colonel?
The Colonel did. Well, according to the sign at the Taco Bell KFC on McGinnis, that is what it said. So that is where I'm getting that piece of information.
Well, he snuck up from behind, hit her with his hammer, dragged her into a vacant lot, and stabbed her in the eye with his screwdriver.
Ooh.
Well, that was one of those where he said that he felt her eyes were staring at him.
Yeah. Oh.
And he, after she dead on the ground, that was one of those like full like psychological freakouts that he had.
Eyes and teeth. You know, I am doing better with teeth. I don't know what that makes. I watch a lot of horror movies.
Yeah.
I used to have to like turn my head. Now I can watch teeth stuff, but eye stuff, man.
Man, Eyes of My Mother. That fucking movie. If you have an eye thing problem, you want to never feel comfortable ever again, watch Eyes of My Mother.
Well, that's a great recommendation.
And Julia's eyes as well. There's a really great eye scene in that one that'll really fuck you up.
Yes.
Now, even though no one got a look at Peter, a brown, square-shaped car had been seen in the area. And that perfectly matched Peter Sutcliffe's brand new Range Rover.
He got a fucking Range Rover?
Like Henry said, he was one of those guys that spent all his fucking money on cars.
Okay.
Loves cars. Sells the old cars, gets you new cars, constantly shuffling in and out. It's his thing. It's like us with Jordans.
Absolutely.
The only person who put it together was Trevor Birdsall. And if you'll remember, Birdsall was present at two of Sutcliffe's earliest assaults, including the attempted murder of Olive Smelt. So, Birdsall decided to finally write a letter to the police telling them what he knew.
All no cats can be brown. All no cats can be yellow. All no cats can be grey. And I also know my best friends, the Yorkshire Ripper.
Remember that when everyone was being mean to everyone in seventh grade, and then a pretty girl would say, they would mouth the words olive juice, but it seems like they say I love you, and then you'd be like, oh, that's so nice. And then they would say olive juice. I said olive juice. I didn't say I love you.
What psychological torture are you talking about? That never happened to me.
That never happened to you?
You're pulling from a very specific memory.
Seventh grade, her name was Angie. I totally remember it.
Well, okay. And when no one responded to his letter after 24 hours, though, Birdsall had a few drinks, and at the urging of his girlfriend, went to the police and repeated everything. But once again, possibly because he was drunk, nothing happened. The statement was filed and forgotten. Now, at this point, members of British Parliament were trying to get involved.
I want to kill a prostitute. I want to do it myself. I've been thinking about it for a very long time, and I'm sick of the commoners getting to do it and me not getting to do it.
I say we legalize it. Oh, legalize sex work? No, legalize killing sex workers.
Kill them, legalize murder.
They even talked about the possibility of Scotland Yard taking over, which would have probably been a good move about 3 years earlier. Mm. Scotland Yard would have been able to deal with all the fucking paperwork. But what eventually ended Peter Sutcliffe's reign of terror was not the entrance of a hotshot Scotland Yard inspector, or some new computational technique, or forensics, or even a clever sting. Instead, it was nothing more than a routine sweep of a red light district conducted by beat cops. It was a fucking accident.
It reminds me of the Chikatilo, the way that they kind of cornered him and got him, that it took so long, and eventually it was just straight up just covering every single place that he could go. Just by, like, use of force of humans, of, like, bodies.
On January 2nd, 1981, Peter, calling himself Dave, picked up a lady of the night in Sheffield at about 10:20 p.m. and parked next to a nearby building. From what the woman, who called herself Sharon, said, Peter tried to get an erection for 10 minutes, but was never able to achieve it, and blamed his inability to get hard on his wife's constant nagging.
But she ain't here. Call me.
Yeah, it won't make it bigger, and I forgot my penis rope.
Get bigger! God.
Get bigger!
That's hard. When you're screaming, get bigger, that's not where you not where you want to be.
What are the rules in this situation? Is it like when you're not supposed to go shopping hungry, right? Yeah. But, like, shouldn't you be aroused if you're going to try to find a sex worker already? Like, why would you go there without... I mean, I don't know why I'm asking you.
I mean,
you, but
I think that you are aroused, but then sometimes the penis doesn't show up. Unless you, or if you've been having some delicious Garrison Brothers whiskey, and I do love, whiskey, but sometimes what it does is it makes your spirit hard.
Yeah.
Your penis very soft.
I see. It's like Jim Carrey in Dumb and Dumber. She meant 10 p.m. So maybe the penis just got the time wrong.
And we know Peter was planning to murder this woman because he was wearing his special serial killer underwear at the time.
Oh, my God.
But before he got the chance, police boxed in his car and placed both him and his companion under arrest. And this wasn't even necessarily, we're going to arrest everybody when it comes to the Yorkshire Ripper. They're just, we're going to arrest this guy who is obviously in the throes of paid passion.
Well, to me, it shows that he had lost the edge. He had parked, like, right next to the road, and he said that it was weird the way he was parked. He was parked as if he was trying to make a quick getaway instead of someone who was actually trying to hide having sex with a prostitute.
Interesting.
Well, while the officers were escorting Sharon to their car, Peter grabbed all his implements of murder and scurried off to throw them behind an oil storage tank next to the nearest building. When cops asked what the noise was all about, Peter shrugged and said he'd been bursting for a pee. And cops shrugged too. Said, all right, let's go down to the station.
No, my piss always makes a clattering like a hammer and a knife thrown into an alleyway garbage can. It always sounds like a cartoon where you throw a baseball out a window and you crash through objects for 5 minutes. My piss is very strong.
Either that man just threw away a bunch of evidence making him a serial killer, or he's got the worst kidney stones I have ever heard in my entire life.
But once they arrived at the station, certain things about Sutcliffe started to fall into place. Police saw that Sutcliffe's face almost perfectly matched the photo fit given by Maureen Long. So the cops rightly went back to see what Sutcliffe might have been doing in the moment he disappeared from the officer's sight back at the arrest scene. And almost immediately, the officer found Peter's ball-peen hammer and knife. And with that, the Yorkshire Ripper was finally in police custody over 5 years after he'd committed his first murder.
Yay, but it took too long, but yay!
And none of the investigative bullshit mattered. None of it.
They just nabbed him the old school way.
Wow.
By him being stupid.
Yep. That's a great day for a beat cop, man.
Yeah, it is.
Yes, it is.
That's how my father got his accolades. He accidentally caught a murderer on a traffic stop.
Yep.
And when police went to search Sutcliffe's house the next morning, they found Sonia watching a German TV show. But even when they explained to her that Peter was in quite a bit of trouble, she paid more attention to the TV than to the cops.
Sid, they're trying to see how many sausages they can fit inside of a barrel. And now they're up to 24. This is the best show I've ever seen. What a tremendous waste of sausages.
Well, I hope somebody eats some.
Then, of course, a quick search of the house found the hacksaw, screwdrivers that match stab wounds on victims of the Riffer, and the knife missing from the kitchen's butcher block matched the one Peter had tried to hide. And for me, this brings up an interesting question about Sonia. If Peter was taking knives from the kitchen and bringing them back every time he went out, did Sonia ever notice? Or more importantly, if she did notice, did she care?
Well, I wasn't using them to kill a prostitute tonight, so let him do it.
Yeah, I mean, apparently she wasn't very good in the kitchen, so maybe she didn't even care about the knives.
Actually, in the kitchen, Mick did say that the only thing she could cook, he said that she made these little bowls of spicy things that what? No one really knew
UK
what
UK cooking,
was.
Man.
I like it. I like little bowls
it's
of
just
spicy
peppers.
Things.
It's, no. They're just fucking peppers. You just go to the store and you can buy peppers.
A little bowl of spicy things. That's what I call peppers.
But from what one of the officers who searched the Sutcliffe home that day said, while he wouldn't have believed before that any woman could be married to the Ripper and not know it, he was convinced that if anyone could have been oblivious, it was Sonia.
She's the type of the person that you could have taken a chair out from underneath her while she was sitting in, and she would, like, still be sitting in no air. You know right. what I mean? Like, she'd just being like, she's just, because they say that if it's true, if her diagnosis of schizophrenia is true, it's a part of that where things are just kind of a wash, right? Yeah. Where you have a very difficult time paying attention and absorbing details because your brain is going do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do. Like as the main show. The main show is like, you know, you're talking to the salt and pepper shit, and the salt and pepper shit's telling you to kill the president. And right. you're like, not now. Der Borscht is on. They got 47 sausages into this new barrel.
I love that. Yeah, she sounds like the wife of the main character from the original It, who looked into the lights.
Mm-hmm.
Just catatonic.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, beautiful.
Now, it didn't take but about 2 days for Peter Sutcliffe to confess to being the Yorkshire Ripper, and the British public reacted as if the old days of public execution were back, gathering 2,000 strong outside the courthouse during Peter's first hearing.
Hang him! Hang him!
That's what it was kind of crazy. It was old school. It must feel good for a British to be able to do an old-fashioned hang-a mob.
Well, they're the best at it. Did they make little t-shirts like we did with Burn Bundy Burn?
No, they just
no t-shirts.
Screamed, they just screamed, hang the fucking bastard over and over and over again.
Well, again, that's a very long thing.
Now, Sutcliffe pleaded guilty, but not to murder. Instead, Peter pled guilty to manslaughter, because by the time it came to plead, he'd figured that his only defense was insanity, and Peter had suddenly decided that he was schizophrenic.
Oh, really?
Absolutely. Even though he had near total recall over all of the details of all of his crimes, and never once in the beginning talked about God, never talked about it, Sonia, never talked about it to the police, never talked about it to his friends. This concept of, which I, you know, as a surface level understanding of Peter Sutcliffe, I'd always known him as a missionary killer who believed in God. But now you're seeing that it straight up was just a fucking ad lib at the very end that became like his calling card for true crime novelists from then on.
He convinced a whole team of doctors that he'd killed sex workers because God had commanded him to do so during various paranoid delusions that had started when Sutcliffe was 19. And of course, that removes any and all sexual component to his crimes.
Yeah, that it was some missionary cleansing thing, even though that obviously it does still fall in the line of you probably are having a sexual gratification for, because how many times do priests fucking whip themselves so they come all over a bunch of little boys? That's like what they love that. That's kind of a thing for them. Jesus Christ is screaming on the fucking nails of the cross with his big taut beautiful white body.
Jesus Christ just singing, they're just screaming, you can take my robe off if you'd like to. You would love to see what the Christ package has in store for you.
Yeah, human consciousness really was a mistake, wasn't it?
It was.
It's an offshoot. It's a mistake. But not a bad... It's a mistake in the term that it was. It's neutral, but it just happened.
But the sad thing is, you know these cops, he did this because he knew that the culture... They probably kind of were like, well, I see the point. Yeah. I see what he was going for. Like, this is really, this plays on a much larger thing, theme that we talk about regularly.
Well, you might be asking how any medical professional could believe there was no sexual component when Sutcliffe was caught wearing a custom-made garment crafted specifically for public masturbation.
Mm-hmm.
Seems like the whole no sexual component to this thing, that fucking falls away completely.
Yeah, he didn't just want to have a really breezy dick.
Well, they didn't take the garment into account because they didn't know about it. Now, I don't know if this is British squeamishness or if things like this happen all the time everywhere in serial killer cases, but cops kept the garment completely off the record.
Man, I would have been fucking... That should have been a fucking thing.
Yeah,
throughout
dude.
UK. Like, it should have been known, and it should have been Yorkshire pants, and people should have been, like, doing it as a serial killer joke for years, and no one knew about it.
No one knew.
I understand them not doing it before the case is solved, right? Because you don't want to give up information on that, but at this point...
Dude, they never reported it. They never filed it. They ordered it to be burned. They said, burn it. We don't need it. We've got this guy dead to rights.
Jeez.
Meanwhile, there's somebody in Yorkshire, I guarantee, sitting right now, asshole directly on the chair, because they themselves are wearing a pair of Yorkshire pants.
Yeah.
Listening to this episode.
Well, nothing wrong with that.
But it was saved by a cop named Alan Foster, who kept it just in case it ever needed to be tested against unsolved murders or attacks. Or so he said. Maybe he just wanted to keep it.
No, Marcus,
he's
I don't
smelling
think,
it.
Yeah, exactly.
Not smelling it. It's just like, it's a true crime artifact. It's Peter Sutcliffe's fucking serial killer pants. It's Peter Sutcliffe's Yorkshire pants.
This is why you're not a detective, because it's not an artifact. It's a piece of evidence. I don't think this guy was starting a museum of serial killers who show their cock via sweater.
Because honestly, wouldn't you want one for yourself? A new one? A nice one?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I'm not saying he wore it himself.
Yeah, I'd fuck me. I tried it on once.
Did you get to try on Charles Manson's jacket?
No, I did not.
Where is that at?
The Museum of Death in Los Angeles.
They got his jacket. It must be very tiny, even for
I'm
you.
Yeah, I'm way too big to be in Charles Manson's jacket. He's,
5'3"
He is almost a foot shorter than I am.
Damn.
Wow.
Yeah,
he's very tiny.
Yeah, 5'2", 5'3". It'd even be too small for you, Henry.
Aw.
Yeah, I know. We can't even, you know.
Well, the information about Peter Sutcliffe's Yorkshire pajamas might have been lost forever had author Michael Bilton not discovered it upon interviewing Alan Foster for the book Wicked Beyond Belief. Which, this really makes me wonder just how many details about serial killers have been kept from us.
Mm.
How many details did cops come across that they just like, nah, no one needs to know about that?
Yeah, like how many tapes did Jeffrey Dahmer have in his home just filled with Seinfeld? It's the little things that build a person's personality for you, right? Because this shows just how much work Peter Sutcliffe put into this part of the masturbation ceremony.
Yeah.
And that he needed, he couldn't even fucking spend the time opening up his pants and like pulling his underwear aside. His dick needed to be out. But for some reason, he needed something covering his butt.
Well, he's not plugging it because he's going to get cold.
Well, the whole thing, but I also don't understand. Well, that's the thing. You got to have the knee pads, though. The knee pads are an essential part of this.
Absolutely.
I'm just not having this guy come over to lay carpet in my house. That's all I'm saying.
But while Sutcliffe was able to fool a fair amount of medical doctors with his schizophrenia claims, he wasn't able to fool a jury. And Peter Sutcliffe was given 20 life sentences.
Good.
Now, he did end up in Broadmoor Hospital for a short period of time with, a lot of serial killers ended up in Broadmoor Prison. And also, June and Jennifer Gibbons, the silent twins, who we hope to cover in the future.
Cool.
They were also there at the same time as Peter Sutcliffe.
It's a real who's who, huh?
But eventually, Peter Sutcliffe was transferred to Franklin Prison, where he remains to this day. As far as Sonia Sutcliffe goes, she still lives at number 6 Garden Lane. and only stopped visiting Peter in 2015 after the man she married in 1997 supposedly told her, "It's either Peter or it's me."
It only took him 18 years, huh, to come up to that?
It took 18 years, and she used to visit all the time, but now the son is lamenting about how she won't answer his Christmas cards.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my God. So he's still around, huh?
Dude, not only is he still around, like, we still know what Peter Sutcliffe's thoughts are. To this day, Peter's thoughts are still the subject of British tabloids, and at least two stories a year are devoted to the Yorkshire Ripper as if he's just another celebrity from England's past.
I thought you were going to say he has a podcast, and I'm like, we cannot deal with all this competition all the time.
We're going to bring it to the network.
Yeah.
He was complaining that the COVID-19 restrictions were too much, and he couldn't get his soda.
Yep.
He needs the soda. He needs his. I wonder what he drinks.
He couldn't go to the canteen. I would imagine, a Yorkshireman, oh, that fucker drinks he drinks Iron Brew, yeah. Well, in fact, just 4 days ago, according to The Sun, Peter Sutcliffe signed a do not resuscitate order in the eventuality that he contracts the coronavirus.
I guess would they resuscitate him? I think, isn't that a little bit presumptuous of him?
And apparently, one thing that has not aged well, say Peter Sutcliffe, still doing the Macarena.
Oh, my God. That's pathetic.
But no matter what kills Peter Sutcliffe, he's still going to die in prison. And here's to hoping that the Yorkshire pajamas get spread far and wide before that happens. I really hope he finds out that everyone knows about his stupid fucking underwear.
Send us a picture of you in your Yorkshire pants, and we'll put it up on Twitter.
We can't. You cannot legally. Oh, no, you could put that on Twitter.
You can put that on Twitter.
They allow dings and dongs on there. I don't know why I
don't email us, but because I don't want the people who check our email to have to look at your fucking Yorkshire pudding.
It's me. I am checking the email on the side stories. So I will. I'll look at it.
All right. Send it to side stories then.
Don't send it to side stories. How did we even get here? It's weird. I don't feel like justice was served. I know that he was arrested. I know. But the fact he's still alive, just living in prison, bitching about not being able to go to the canteen. He's getting it too. I feel like his life is too good.
He's got it pretty easy.
Yeah.
I think that he, because of the police, he killed 10 more people than he would have killed.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, either way, it's great. There's Peter Sutcliffe, the Yorkshire Ripper. There it was. Honestly, that was a great story. Great job, guys.
Thank you. Very
interesting. This serial killer, we talk about like, what could we discover next? But this actually had a lot of ins and outs.
It really
did. Extremely unique.
It's a very unique case, yeah.
Very unique.
Very unique to the UK as well.
All right.
Yes, and shouldn't you be proud, UK listeners?
You got
guys,
one.
Guys, this is a big old heavy hitter. We're going straight into weird shit next week. Then we're going to be doing a little bit of a break. But then the summer of strange begins.
Love
this.
We're doing
a lot of UFO, a lot of weird bullshit. Very, very excited. Very unique topics coming down the pipe.
I love it. Summer of strange is soon to be upon us. Also, if you want to kill 2 hours, speaking of Mirror, we got our live show out. So you can go to lastpodcastlive.com. You can buy the show for $6.66 and enjoy it. I hope, we worked really hard on crafting the best, funniest, dumbest possible show we could.
I think this is better than the last one.
Oh, yeah. Definitely.
I think it's better than the last one. It's definitely looser, and it's definitely, it's a big old work, and, it's our methadone for us not being on the road right now.
Yes.
So it's like I'm watching the old thing and remembering how much fun we had on the road last year, and it's not the same, and it's not like I get angry or like start to feel like I'm going to flip out. I pull it back, and I know that eventually we'll be able to go on the road again.
Yeah. I'm just happy that Puffin can't talk. The thing is, with this live show, we had a situation where my belly was showing the first half of the show that we had to edit out.
Yes.
So you might see a camera cut or two where you're like, why are they just showing Ben's nose? Because when you film me from below, there's a lot of stuff going on down there.
Yep.
So you'll notice some of that.
Yeah, it was when I was editing the episode last week and Henry made the That noise, that made me really miss performing live with you guys. So I, you know, because it was a noise that Henry made during the live show so many times last year. We're really, but we'll get back to it soon. And you
we
know,
must.
We really love doing this live show featured on this special. We really love doing it all over the world last year.
Oh, so
if you were able to come out and see us sometime last year and you want to kind of relive that show. That's the one that we recorded. So go on and check it out. $6.66, lastpodcastlive.com.
Yes, absolutely. And of course, pick up the book. Thank you all so much. Marcus mentioned it during this episode. But we are 2 weeks on the New York Times bestseller list. We were number 3, and now we're number 13. Both lucky numbers for us, because there's 3 of us, and then 13. It's got a fun history. So
that is good.
Isn't that fun?
What's really fun is we got knocked down by yet another Kennedy book.
Oh my god.
Why did you guys start that?
Lord,
you guys
dude,
started
I just
it,
so much Kennedy shit, dude. It's just so much.
Awesome, everyone. Well, thank you all so much for listening. Hail yourselves.
Hail Satan.
Ogin.
Magustalations.
Hail me, you bitch.
Bitch. That's right. And be careful. If your husband's going out after midnight taking knives, at the very least, follow him.
Yeah. And make sure that you remember that song. Let me smell your dick.
This show is made possible by listeners like you. Thanks to our ad sponsors, you can support our shows by supporting them. For more shows like the one you just listened to, go to lastpodcastnetwork.com.